Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University Audio Presentation of the Month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandian Associates' vision of teaching small businesses how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company.
In every company that will survive to see the year 2000, with darn few exceptions, has now or will soon have at least one person dedicated to the business of conducting business. This tape presentation is designed for the entrepreneur that is doing the job, living the job, and loving the job. While in the service business, a successful business adventure is one that you are able to make a customer feel terrific, your people feel terrific, and you feel terrific while generating a profit for yourself and your family. Before anyone can be successful in the service business, they must first believe that they will be successful and have a profitable career servicing the needs of others. I had a colleague recently tell me that he needed his head examined for being in the service business. It was a 24-hour-a-day nightmare that required skilled technicians that could not be found, and if they could not be retained. Then their duty was to service the needs of a clientele that couldn't be satisfied no matter what. No one could argue that all of the things that he described are problems we face daily. However, he didn't stop to think that there is another side to the coin. First, because of these significant obstacles, success is not easily achieved. Only the dedicated need to apply for a service career. So the wheat is easily separated from the straw. Secondly, there is no other business that I know of that the business manager can get into his car and drive around the community and look at their inventory of opportunities. If you are in the lawn care business, all the lawns and towns are in your inventory, and you can see them. The plumbers can know that if there is not a small house behind the big house, that there is a high probability that there's a bathroom inside, and most usually a kitchen as well. If you are a painter and see paint peeling from the houses and the fences in the neighborhoods that you're in, this inventory is also yours to have. The beautiful part of all this is not only can we see our inventory of opportunities, we can sleep well at night knowing that these opportunities are not going to be shipped to China, Mexico, or any other place due to some whim of a corporate board of directors. The last and best part of the service business is best shown by the evolution of the automobile business. 20 years ago, the sale of new cars drove all of the dealerships in America. Now they play a strong part, but the profit generated by most dealerships comes from the sale of the used inventory and the service department. This is due to the fact that new cars are very costly, and people are making their automobiles last longer. The aftermarket players like the oil companies, the filter companies, the tire companies are flourishing and never seem to know if the interest rates are up or down. If they did know if the new car market was off, it would only drive their market harder. Our business can be seen, inventoried by our own eyes, and will never disappear overnight due to a flight to a foreign country. All of these are very strong reasons to invest some time and some money in this marketplace. We are as American as apple pie. There is not anything or anybody that's going to dictate to us how we operate, or where we operate. Our businesses are like farming businesses. They're dedicated to our hometowns. They allow us to live where we want to live, go to school where we want to go to school, go to church where we want to go to church. Nowhere else in America can I think that a young man or a young woman could have a better opportunity to live a good life in the place of their choice with any greater success and dignity than they could by entering into this very vast, widely diversified, and very profitable service business. If you are trying to grow your service business or enter the arena, one of the first questions that must be answered is, will the community support my efforts? The answer to this question is more art than science, since there is no guarantee of how anyone will react to your efforts prior to your offering them the chance to take advantage of them. Let's take my town as an example. There are approximately 35,000 potential clients in my market area. Abraham Lincoln has told me 40% of them would never consider doing business with me, so that leaves me with 21,000. I am in the HVAC business and do a good deal of residential business, and in our area, the average family has 3.5 members in each family. So this leaves me with approximately 6,000 houses to work with and somewhere near 500 business opportunities that fit my company. Our community is growing at a rate of around 3% per year. So if this holds true, there will be 180 houses that are possibilities for us to work on in the new construction market. The average family income in our area is $30,000 per year. So these homeowners, or apartment dwellers, have a $180 million pool of money to draw from in the residential retrofit market alone. When the new construction side is considered, the pool grows dramatically. This is enough opportunity for me to consider applying for some of this money. Like Lee Trevino says, someone has to win these golf tournaments. It might just as well be me. Well, we feel that we might just as well have some of this business, so we apply for it. Every community that has a supermarket has a minimum of $4 million of food business to keep its doors open. Every major car dealership is about the same dollar volume. If your town has a Walmart or other large retail outlet, it will require another $6 million. Bare bones, no frills, poverty level at the minimum. A town of 10,000 people will drink over $100,000 of Coca-Cola per year, chew $25,000 worth of chewing gum, smoke $250,000 worth of cigarettes, bare minimum, absolute poverty level. Almost every community achieves sales figures far, far in excess to this. The 35,000 people will have an adult population of 26,000. And the national average income for an American adult is $19,500. This represents a grand total of $507 million floating around our community each year, without exception. They're here. We don't have to find them. They're here. The money is there. The problem is best described by a TV commercial that showed a vault open with pallet after pallet of money stacked up in it. The man said that there was no shortage of money. However, the problem was that it did not come with instructions on how to use it. The business is out there. The challenge is, how do we get our share of it? Opportunities are always there. The money is always there. There is no problem finding money to match opportunities if the service matches the needs. A real clear example of this is when I bought my Jeep, went into the dealership, and this beautiful black cherry-colored Jeep was in the parking lot. I'd never seen anything that color. It took my eye. I thought it was gorgeous. I knew I was the only person in my town to have one. Until I pulled out into the street. And then I began to see black cherry-colored vehicles here and there. There was one in the parking lot of the barber shop. There was another that I met at the road. This color was a lot more prevalent than what I thought it was. It was always there. However, I chose not to look for it. And until I started trying to see this particular color, I couldn't find it. But it was always there. The same phenomenon is true about our business. It's there. It's out there. There is no shortage of business. It's just, can you see it? And if you can see it, will you take action on it, to walk toward it, to move toward it? Or are you going to step aside and say, that parking place is too good for me. I better take this euchre place back in the back. Choice is yours. All this is well and good for Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, Walmart, all of the big players. They're there. They can play. They deserve it. But what about me? I'm just a service fella. I kind of wear a shirt with my name over the pocket. I fix things that are really reliable and they don't break very often. They'll do you a good job and will do you a good job, but I can't go out there and vie for this money. It doesn't belong to me. The answer to that is hogwash. It belongs to you. People want to be comfortable. They want to be warm when it's cool. They want to be cool when it's warm. In our community, when it gets hot, people go inside. And when it gets cold, they reminisce and sing by the fire. They want to be comfortable. They treasure it. And they want a relationship with someone that they can trust. Someone that they know can get the job done. Whether it's knowing that their plumbing is in perfect shape, their lawn is trimmed, their garbage is picked up, their fence is painted, or their HVAC system is running and humming along and making them feel terrific, they would rather trade some of their money than trade some of their comfort or convenience. The problem is, we have not bothered to ask them to do so. We have not stopped and said, would you rather have $10, $20, $30, $50, whatever the amount might be, or would you rather know that your fence will be painted or your lawn will be trimmed? The answer is, they would rather trade. As you go up and down your neighborhood, you see people making this trade daily. This is not an unusual and uncommon occurrence. People want to have good quality services provided. When you get a group of people together and they gather around at a social event, one topic almost always comes up, and that is, my goodness, I can't find quality people to work on my car, or I can't find quality people to mow my yard, or I can't find somebody reliable to keep my comfort system in tune, or my plumbing in top shape, or my electrical work to be just exactly like it should. These things are out there every day. These are the kinds of things that we have to cultivate and develop. So, how do we do that? That leads us to our next topic, advertising. A good friend of mine and highly respected and successful real estate man has told me over and over and over again that in order to have business, you have to buy it. What he means by this is you have to not be afraid to advertise, to put out that quality advertisement, to entice people to want to take advantage of your services, to let them know who you are and what you have for them and why they would be much better off to let you manage their money and their problems than they manage their money and their problems. This gentleman has also told me the startling truth of advertising. He said that 80% of the money you spend on advertising will be wasted, totally useless, thrown in the drain. And the other 20% will be highly effective. Problem is, when you advertise, you can't tell the 80 from the 20. So you have to spend it all. Advertising is a very expensive, very, very thought-provoking, very deep, very complex, very, very interesting area of business all on its own. We in the service business have to rely on advertising, but don't have much time to devote to it. We have other things to do. We have drains to unclog, lawns to mow, HVAC systems to work on. We've got all kinds of things that we need to do that occupy our time. And if you're going to hire somebody and spend no time yourself, it's very expensive. To go to a radio station or a television station or a newspaper and say, "Give me a good job, Charlie," is very expensive. But it doesn't require much of your time. Unfortunately, all of us that are in business have this magical thing that we have to try and live by called a budget. Budgets are those things that run out before they get started. Budgets were never, ever, ever designed to function within the realm of reality. Budgets are finite. Budgets are the kinds of things that we constantly fight, we constantly worry with. So knowing that we have a possible shortage of money and a tremendous overage on an 80-20 ratio of need for advertising, let's talk about it a little bit. Let's see what we can kind of do to hedge our bet. First of all, if we did want to advertise and get out and roll our sleeves up and buck shoulders with the big boys, the Coca-Colas, the Pepsis, the Millers, the Budweisers, the Chevys, the Fords of this world, we would have an ominous, tremendously difficult task. They are professional, they are good, and their pockets are deep. They have the ability to flood the airways, and if we get out and try and compete with them on a consistent basis, we surely will lose. So that forces us to take a look at maybe another avenue. It would be hard to go anywhere and not see, hear, or use something that did not have a corporate name on it. It has been said that everyone in America receives 50,000 requests to buy something each and every day. When considering that clothing manufacturers have their label on the outside of their clothing, and all of the radio, TV, and visual advertisements we are subjected to each day, that huge number might be too small. So how is our voice going to be heard over and above this tremendously deafening roar of other professional people with resources far beyond our wildest expectation? If our company needs to generate a new service volume or wants to start up a one-man band and do, as a target, an additional $100,000 worth of business, it would take an impressive amount of advertising to generate this much additional revenue. Historically in our business, 5 to 10% of gross sales on the most progressive companies is spent on advertising. If we were to double and triple this amount of money, it would not amount to a very big budget. To attract this large amount of business, we have to use a small amount of money. This means we have to be creative. There are lots of methods that we can use. There are lots of things that we can do. If a billboard costs $250 a month in your area, then a truck sign that costs the same amount will reduce this cost by a factor of 12 every year. Plus, it's mobile. It moves from place to place. It's not dislocated on the corner of 12th and Elm. When our company sends a bill, we call them love letters, since we love the fact that we are going to get our money returned. Everyone that receives one of these love letters has an expressed desire to do business with us, and we have their confidence, or hopefully we do. So, with these converted clients, we add an additional appeal for future business, or for the business of a friend, or for a promotion, by simply putting in with our bill a simple, effective, usually brightly colored coupon that allows us to ask them once again, thank you for the business that you have given us. Would you consider doing some more? It's been said that your current customer base is 1,000% more likely to do business with you than a total stranger. So working your existing customer base by offering additional premiums with the billing is a very good idea. One other thing we like to do at our company is we send out a newsletter every spring and fall. We live in the Ozarks, and this is kind of a folksy type of a place. In this newsletter, we're going to talk about the current issues, the Freon issues, the issues about what the EPA is doing, or licensing of our people. We're talking about the new products and the better filters and the humidifiers and the things from season to season that we think our clients are interested in. But along with that, we're going to give them a recipe. We're going to talk about possibly a good book written by somebody here locally that they can enjoy, a spot that they could go to that maybe they haven't thought about before. Possibly a scenic overlook that would allow them to see the Ozarks and its true splendor. All of the things that we think of that make people feel warm and good. And we mail it to our entire customer base every 6 months, every change of season, major change of season. This one item that we do has generated more business for our company than any other one thing that we could possibly ever do. And it has made a lot of people that didn't purchase things directly from us feel good toward us and invite their neighbor to do business with us. it's not always the person that you contact that creates the positive action for sale, the buying decision. It could be the influence of a friend or a neighbor. So our customer base is incredibly important to us, and we talk to our customer base, which we feel is our family, a lot. The main medium that we use to speak to these people outside of our newsletter are coupons. We found that when we use a coupon for savings of a purchase of anything that we have in our company, this will create a shelf life for this coupon or this invitation to be a customer of ours with the longest possible shelf life. We have mailed coupons for $5 off for service or purchases, but have found that we need to have a minimum purchase limit. We had customers want to purchase a furnace filter for $2 with one of these $5 coupons and ask for $3 change. So you have to have a little bit of an ability to control what you're doing and how you do to keep your clients from doing things to you that you do not want to have them to do while doing business with you. To solve the problem, we simply made a purchase of $50 be a requirement before the coupon becomes valid. It costs our company something in the neighborhood of $250 apiece to go out into the open market to acquire a client of any kind, service client, retrofit client, or new construction client. This is a huge cost. To allow somebody to deduct their bill by $5 to attract their business, retain it, maintain it, is not looked upon by us as a discount. It's looked on by us as an investment. These kinds of things we think are like fertilizer to the lawn care business. If we were in the lawn care business, we would every spring guarantee you that we would sell you fertilizer for your lawn at a very low price. I want that grass to grow. I want to cut it 6 more times this year than last. I want your grass to be the lushest and the greenest and the prettiest, and I want my wallet to look the same. This is exactly the way we look at our business. We want to put fertilizer on our sales so that they will grow. We certainly are not trying to minimize the growth potential. One area that our company believes in very strongly is direct mail. We do not have to have the fanciest letter, pay a lot for a slick promotion, or use the services of a professional. Our customers know us and want what we are offering rather than the letter. Seldom ever have I had anybody leave the coupon at home and bring the letter in saying, "Jim, you've outdone yourself this time. This is gorgeous." No, they throw the letter away, probably read half of it or less, take the coupon off, and use it for a $5 discount, which in their particular case becomes at that point in time a presidential issue. Any presidential issue in our company with our clients has to do with the president whose face is on money, which is Washington, Jefferson, Jackson, Grant, Franklin. These are the presidents we're interested in, and it's this presidential issue that we are interested in, and our customers are too. They want to save money. How do we find the right ways to send these direct mail pieces? Where do we get the mailing list? How do we buy that? What do we do? How do we attract our clients? How do we be able to distribute this? Getting the letters is one thing. Getting them to our people is another. Well, one of the simplest and the easiest and the most cost-effective ways is to use the post office. The United States Post Office goes to everybody's house. They know where everybody lives, and they will do it cheaper, more effectively, and better than anybody else. Taking a direct mail piece and buying a direct mail permit and putting it to a rural route or a zip code or a neighborhood allows you the ability to target who you want to send this mail to. Let them see exactly what you want them to see. If there's a 20-year-old neighborhood that you want to do something with that you think would be a wonderful, wonderful, fruitful area for a retrofit business to change things out, whether it be lawn care, whether it be plumbing, whether it be HVAC. You know, these more mature houses need painting, they need carpeting, they need those kinds of things. There is a subdivision full of them. The post office will deliver to just those people in that particular subdivision. Now, they're going to deliver to everybody, but that's okay. We want to make sure that the people that want our goods and services get the offering of being able to purchase our goods and services. Other areas that have new homes, we ask for planned service business. Or you might want to do landscaping. You know that their homes are probably not going to need painting and that their plumbing is probably in a good state of repair, but that certainly doesn't mean that they may not want a jacuzzi. Or they may not want to have a steam bath, or they may not want to have this, or they may not want to have that, or they would like to have a flower bed, or they would like to have their yard landscaped differently with some shrubs. Many, many different things. Every area has a different set of possibilities, a different promotion. Your direct mail can be designed to work expressly and explicitly for these areas. Each direct mail piece has a brightly colored coupon in it and a promotion that is as personal as we can make it be. If there is a timely event that is well known, we will do something with it. At this time of recording, we are telling our customers that even though they cannot watch baseball, we're on the job and ready to serve their needs. Home shows, live remotes at your place of business, trade shows and other special events are also good ways to promote your company on a limited budget. There is one cardinal rule of advertising or promotion or whatever you choose to call this particular art form, and that is consistency. One loud boom is much sooner forgotten than a series of mildly loud explosions that never quit. This is what our company endeavors to be, mildly loud explosions that never quit. Probably the most contested area of service is, how do you price it? There can be no doubt that this is one of the most expensive departments in your company with respect to overhead versus gross sales. The margins that you are satisfied in your new construction or retrofit departments will starve you to death in the service department. There is no substitute for real data. However, it is commonly felt that a 60% margin is required to keep a service department afloat. This cost is justified by the need for a large amount of parts to be inventoried that will not turn with the same intensity as other installation-related items, high-density personnel need for part storage, order and receipt, dispatch, technicians to do the work that have to travel from place to place and often return for parts, as well as the traditional management personnel. This high cost has to be believed by the owners to be real and not easily eroded by emotional discounts. More money is lost in a good service department by the technicians and the people responsible for the billing by feeling, I wouldn't pay that for that motor, than any other reason. They are not questioned by the client. They just feel that it is too high for them to pay and that the other people just won't pay that much for a motor. Having confidence in your pricing is very important. Walmart believes that the price they have applied to their goods is fair. It is seldom seen where a customer is bartering with a checkout person, or the checkout person is altering the cost of the goods due to the fact that they did not wish to pay what was marked on a particular item. The checkout process is simply a mindless process that the checkout associate does and the consumer accepts without any thought process whatsoever. The only thing that is considered is, did you swipe that item more than once? And by swipe, I mean running it across the scanner rather than being investigated by the house detective. Since the advent of the scanner, the day of the cash register manipulation of costs is a thing of the past. This high-tech solution to a low-tech problem is moving into our business as well. The confidence you place in your pricing structure will show up on your bottom line every time. The sick part of this story is Walmart shows a profit margin that is far superior to ours, and we are often seen as too high while they are seen as the low-cost provider. This retail part of the pricing is not the bone of contention in the service business. It is the wholesale pricing of service that stirs up a great deal of debate. When a person calls and says that their toilet is stopped up and running all over the floor, they are not shopping for the lowest cost provider and should receive a retail service with speed in mind. This is not the type call we're concerned about. The area of concern is for schedule maintenance work. This is called planned service in our company. This is seen as wholesale service to us and is treated as such. We sell agreements to our customers, approximately 850 at this time, and promise to provide semi-annual service maintenance on their equipment and give them priority service status on emergency calls with a 20% discount on any parts used. Not only do we do this, but we sell our preventative maintenance at below the street rate of 2 service calls by a substantial amount. We do not generate the desired amount of revenue with this type work and have justified this low cost in 3 ways. The engine that drives this department is to provide this service when we are traditionally not busy. This allows us to inventory labor in the same way as we inventory other supplies. When we sell a planned service agreement, it becomes a shelf item with respect to labor for us to use as we see fit within the guidelines we have set out for each seasonal check. Our service department is seen as a fast food restaurant that cooks all of the food that we have in our cupboards every day. During the times that we have enough customers to eat all this food, we do very, very well. It is the times that we cook all of our food and only a few customers come in to eat that makes us have to throw a lot of the food that we have paid for and cooked away. This is seen as a direct cost and a terrible waste. In this example, the food is our direct labor that our service department has. The times that we have cooked all of our food and had plenty of people to eat it are our traditional seasonal peaks. The first really hot day of the summer, our phone rings. Service business is not a problem, not for us, not for anybody else in our community. The same is true when it is the first cold day. We have no problem dispatching calls for all of the technicians that we could have. As a matter of fact, we could clone each one about 7 times over and still not run out of work to do. This is the problem. How do we be able to maintain a workforce large enough to service our needs when we're busy, yet small enough to afford when we're not? At these traditionally slow periods, when we have too much labor and not enough business, If we sold this labor for anything, it would immediately go to the bottom line of our profit and loss sheet. This reasoning is used for our pricing of planned service or scheduled maintenance. We feel that wholesale is better than nothing. We keep our techs busy when they are usually not, and some cash flowing at all times. This is the same principle that truckers use when pricing the value of their services, taking a load to a destination and discounting it heavily versus hauling an empty truck back. In our business, this is seasonal. We can lower the demand in peak times with this pre-season check, allowing us to prospect for new customers when the peak season does arrive. This is a very powerful dynamic. This is the driver in our service department. We have the same problems that everybody else has. When there is too much, there is too much. When there's not enough, there's not enough. This feast or famine situation creates crisis. Then it creates deficits. What we are trying to do with our planned service or scheduled maintenance is to be able to defer some of these clients, to be able to service them ahead of the season, to get to their needs and satisfy their needs when we have a surplus of time, so that when the business gets brisk and the phone rings with no coaxing whatsoever, we are not talking to the same people we talked to last year. We've already dealt with them. We're finding new people, people that historically have never planned ahead, never enjoyed the benefit of being comfortable the first warm or cold day, that have always been left out into the cold or out into the heat, whichever season it might be. These poor, neglected souls don't know anything about the tranquility and peace of mind of having things taken care of in advance. So we service these people. We have time to service these people. When there is a surplus of customers is the best time to grow your service department. This is impossible if you are servicing the same people you serviced at this same time last year. The thing that I hate worse than losing a client is servicing a client at a peak time year after year. It accomplishes absolutely nothing. It allows my advertising to be wasted. It completely depresses me and my staff because we should be taking care of their needs in advance. We should be selling them good service wholesale so that we can retail our services to new people, maintain them as wholesale clients, and go about the same process again over and over and over. If we have taken care of any percentage of the problems in advance, we are able to increase the amount of business that we do by that very same number, which simply means that if we have 850 clients that we have satisfied their needs prior to the peak season, we have the ability to take on new business by that same dynamic. Now, it would be a little braggadocious to think that we could service that many people in a two-week span, but hopefully very few of them are repetitive clients, and almost all of them are bringing a new set of needs and fresh green money into our company. There is absolutely no way to grow by planting seeds when the growing season is over. Scheduling our maintenance provides level income, an increased customer base for our existing customers, as well as room for those new customers that we are able to take on board. And this only is the only way that I know of that we can effectively and affordably grow in our service department. This gives us time for one more very valuable aspect of being in the service business, and that is answering the never-ending need for additional, well-trained, new technicians to enter our field. If we are doing scheduled maintenance, we have work to do. We have equipment to fix. We have equipment to tune up and adjust, and we have the time to do it. It's during these periods of time when we historically pitched pennies at a crack, painted, serviced, cleaned, and generally wasted time that we now spend on training the next generation of our technicians to be able to adequately fill our needs. There is no substitute for quality, professional people. There is a tremendous shortage, however, of that very same commodity. It's been said that technology has driven us into a two-sided society. One side of our society is being replaced and put out of work by technology, while the other side of it is being driven and worked harder and pressed into service far beyond our wildest expectation, so that very soon half of us are going to be unemployed and the other half of us are going to be overworked. If we are in fact in that overworked side and we need other people to join our side, we need to be able to have the time and the ability and the means to train them. Our school systems, our universities, our trade schools, our technical schools have come a long way and are doing a very good job. But specific fields such as plumbing, electrical, landscaping, heating and air conditioning, interior design, all of the service businesses are so specialized that it's very difficult for any school to turn out a product that we can immediately bring into our employ, sign up on our payroll system, and immediately put to work effectively. There is almost no employee that we can think of hiring that doesn't require training, and training requires that you have time, and time requires that you have money. Scheduled maintenance does not satisfy everything perfectly, but it does address all of those needs. The last area is how to manage the profits. To continue our example, we will use planned service. However, this could be anything that your creativity has added to your business while not removing any time or revenue from your base company. Since this is a new area of growth, the money it generates is also new. We acknowledge that the costs to the host company are real and should be paid. This leaves all of the profit that this effort generates as surplus income. What do we mean by that? If we're to supply planned service to a group of clients, at times that we traditionally swept our labor away and wasted it, then the bare cost to our company must be met. But the profit that it generated that normally was just swept away and wasted now becomes bottom line profit. This is the money. This is the area. This is exactly the thing that we're talking about. Whether it be additional landscaping business or additional plumbing or jacuzzis or hot tubs or whatever it might be. It's this additional fresh business that your creative instinct, your ability to think brought to this company. You need to be rewarded. And in business, the only proper reward is profit. This leaves all of this surplus income that this effort generates as a bank for you to use. In the beginning, it may not look like a whole lot, and probably won't be. Even if it is only $1, it should not be added to the general revenue area of your company. It should be managed in a separate account. This has a twofold purpose. First, it allows you to track your growth, and in this very special area that is fun to watch. Secondly, there is the law of money. The law of money simply states that when any amount is added to a large budget, it gets consumed by that budget and never found again. Every budget uses all of the money that it receives. This is a law. just the same as the law of conservation of energy. Every task consumes the amount of time allotted it. As this grows, it becomes a source of inspiration to the manager that created this condition. Who better to be rewarded than the person that spends the time making the wheels turn? Who better to feel terrific than the person that risked, went out on a limb, took the venture? There is nothing that makes an owner of a business feel better than knowing that his net worth is growing. Our company started out with nothing in this account less than 6 years ago. Now it is responsible for several thousand dollars a month, real, accountable, spendable profit. Profit comes in two categories. One that appears on your profit and loss sheet that your accountant and the IRS know about, but you can never understand just exactly where it is because it's buried in the bowels of your company. It's this amount that they choke up and lay on your desk every year and say, "John, you've had a good year, but I'm glad I said the word had because now you're going to share it with the IRS and the state. And probably you're going to get the privilege of going to the bank to borrow this amount because you're trying to grow and prosper and develop future needs with the capital that you've generated, but we need the tax." The other is this special account that started out as cash, was deposited as cash, and still remains cash. This is the type of profit that I am able to understand. Being in business is very stressful, and many times it's easy to get depressed. During these periods of stress, we have found that shuffling CDs relieves some of the stress, and it sounds a little bit like this. And as that pile grows and matures and multiplies, it gets to sounding like this. It's the same, only longer. This makes me feel terrific. Many of my associates say that their company cannot stand the strain of having a managed account separate from the general funds. My answer to that is, no one can afford one of these accounts. It's just like your parents. If they waited to have you until they could afford you, chances are good your birthday would just be another day to them. These accounts are like children. They arrive without really being asked for, start accumulating value, and accumulate it throughout their life. And without any tremendously unusual effort one day, there is enough money there to fund a college education, thus allowing the next generation to take over. What a wonderful story. What a better thing could you think of to happen to your company than for it to accrue some value, grow and mature as you grow and mature, and guarantee that one day when it's your turn to walk on the golf courses of life, that your feet find a way to get there. What a wonderful thing to think of. If your efforts were no better than mine, and after 6 years you had 850 of these accounts at, let's just say, $100 a year, it would yield $85,000 every year. Let's assume that 50% of this amount is raw cost, and the value of the residual is only $42,500. What a pity. That is a mind-boggling figure. But it's real. It can be achieved. It's not pie in the sky. It doesn't require that you have to know anything more than you currently know. It doesn't require that you have to do anything other than you're currently doing. It doesn't require that you have to perform unusual bits of work at odd periods of time. It just requires that every day that you come into your office with the idea of making it be just a little bit better than yesterday was. and that when an opportunity comes up, you won't turn your back on it. It will become a black cherry colored Jeep. You'll see it. You'll recognize it. You'll know exactly where it is. You will believe that it's yours, and you will put it in that very prestigious parking place. Our company was designed to provide employment, service to our customers, and provide my family with a comfortable living. The last item on this list is not the least significant to me and my family. The service business has made this become a reality. It is my fervent wish that some of the things that you might have heard today, some of the things that I might have expressed to you, might help you do just a little bit to make your life a little bit more secure, just a little bit happier, maybe a little bit more profitable. If nothing else, at least know that you're a very valuable person that serves a wonderful place in society that's very important and very needed, just as important as the doctor, just as important as the lawyer, just as important as the banker, because when they're cold, they call you. So you're not insignificant. When they need their fence painted, they call you. When their toilet runs over onto the floor, they call you. You are a very valuable part of society. The service business is the growing segment of society today. Opportunities are here. They will not go away, but more and more people are going to apply for them. As it becomes more common knowledge that a profit can be made in the service business, better and better players will start to play in the arena. Roll up your sleeves. Let's have some fun.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 800-432-7963. The vision of Grandian Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable business. For more information on how we do that, check out our website, www.grandiassociates.com, or give us a call, 1-800-432-7963. The Small Business University audio presentation of the month is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963.